If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
You've heard of the Santa Ana winds that are blowing heavily and blowing fire all over Southern California? And you've heard of the Windy City in Chicago, where the politicians are famous for blowing hope and care for the future out of their nostrils or other orifices. You've heard of that, right? They're all blowing it, and they're blowing it badly. It's an idiot wind. The song by Bob Dylan, The Idiot Wind. Blowing through the flowers of your tomb, blowing through the curtains in your room, idiot wind. Blowing every time you move your teeth. You're an idiot, babe. It's a wonder that you still know how to breathe. I recommend that movie most highly, but right now I want you to think of California and Illinois, two progressive states, bluer than blue states, destroying themselves. The Californians didn't want to clean the brush on the hills of Southern California. They didn't want to release goats to foraging and grazing. And so they ended up with piles and piles of dry, dead wood on the ground, forest ground. And you know what that is? That's called kindling. Meanwhile, Mayor Johnson, Brandon Johnson, is fighting off an effort to recall him. It's come from a fellow named Dan Boland, and Johnson accuses him of being a right-winger and a suburbanite, although Boland is nothing of the kind. He's a Lakeview resident. He's a Chicago. I don't see the big bleeping deal. I mean, what's wrong with recalling a failed mayor before it happens, before the final blow happens and the blow of the idiot wind? To talk about all this is Austin Berg of the Illinois Policy Institute. Joining me, as always, is Jeff Carlin, WGN executive producer, my friend, friend of Kat's, husband to the lovely Christine. And where are you? Oh, I'm sorry, and I forgot to tell you who I am. I'm John Cass, editor of johncassnews.com. I want you to subscribe. It's only $50 a year. And where are you? As Austin Berg tells us about the recall, and as Mayor Brandon Johnson shouts racism and blusters, as Gavin Newsom and the mayor of Los Angeles argue that they're being subject to some sort of Trumpian coup, even though all it is common sense. You're on the Chicago Way podcast with John Cass, Austin Berg, and Jeff Carlin on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
A guy who lives high on the hog, and he has this Tammany Hall style attitude to power, and it's the Chicago way. Absolutely.
Look, the Chicago way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago way.
The Chicago way. That's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
So, our guest, as promised, is Austin Berg of the Illinois Policy Institute. And my question for Austin is, poor Dan Boland, the suburban right-winger, is he? Or is he just a Chicagoan who's wants to recall the mayor of Chicago because he's a failure.
He is neither suburban nor right wing in my experiences with Dan. But you're right. It's sort of he was one of the first people to kind of raise the specter of recall for the mayor of Chicago when he started a citizens initiative gathering petition signatures to get Chicago a recall mechanism. And as many of your listeners may know, Chicago does not have any ability currently to recall the mayor. We are one of only four of the top 15 cities in the country that lacks this ability. What Dan's recall petition would have done is it would have put the mechanism on the ballot at the next election. Do you guys want recall or not? And then that would establish a process to put the mayor on, you know, on the ballot for recall in the election following that. But recently, Democratic State Representative LaShawn Ford of Chicago introduced a bill in Springfield, as he has done since 2015, every General Assembly, that would establish a recall mechanism for Chicago through state law. And his is different in that it would take effect much sooner. The entire process would run far more quickly, actually, than what Mr. Boland's petition would do. And there is massive popular support for that. And I think it's a good discussion for Chicagoans to have. I am slightly worried that we're falling into the same trap of waiting for Superman, where we think that everything will be fixed because, you know, we throw out the old mayor and put in a new mayor. But I do think the structural conversation is good.
Well, we have we believe that Chicago is fixed. Illinois is fixed because they're about to throw Mike Madigan in prison.
Exactly.
That should fix everything.
Right. We saved it.
We saved it.
I always say if federal corruption convictions reduced corruption, Illinois would be the least corrupt state in the nation. And it does not. So, again, you got to go back to the structural. But we always like talking about the personal as Chicagoans. Right. Every single conversation I have, and this could go from, you know, the biggest fancy, you know, civic institutions and philanthropists. I will talk about structure and policy for a while, and this is changing. I think people are actually starting to get that conversation, but inevitably, the last 5% of that conversation, there's a leaning in and a soft, so who you got? Who you got for mayor, right? And we have to get out of that mentality. I think it's a pathology.
Sure. You got a guy, you know, Chicago is Malort and old style. It's interesting. I mean, so the differential here is that the city itself has no mechanism, but the state could create a mechanism. But then, I mean, it would have to get on a ballot. I mean, that's a long road. And like you said, we're already halfway through with Johnson. His numbers are terrible. And
what are they now?
I mean, he's in the teens among black males, I believe, which if that's a bell ringer for you or bellwether for you, that's a bad one because I think his overall is 14 last I saw, but Austin, you're the keeper of the numbers. I mean, you probably have a better handle on it than I do.
Yeah, it's in the mid-teens. I think he's pulling even with COVID, as a person recently told me.
Well, that's the thing. So speaking of, you know, COVID and polling numbers and everything, I mean, he's polling near zero with J.B. Pritzker. I mean, that riff, that feud is – I did not have that on my bingo card for 2025. But Austin, can you explain what's going on there? Because it sounds like, from my viewpoint, that Brandon Johnson wants to play in the big leagues and wants to pretend like he's making things happen, but is essentially avoided Pritzker altogether.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for him to find a friend. And before I get into that, I should mention very briefly on the recall. I'm totally open to the idea that it's a kind of waste of time and money to have a bunch of extra elections to recall the mayor.
Right.
However, Chicago, and again, this is like where we get into the structural stuff. This is important.
Right.
It's an important thing to recognize. Mm-hmm. We are the only big city to elect our mayor in February. So our regular mayoral election is not an accountability measure on the mayor.
Right.
So you can either have elections when people vote, or you can have a recall mechanism. But you can't have elections when people don't vote and have no recall mechanism. So anyway, that's my spiel on the recall.
Very good point.
How can we have a mayoral election without the whole city wearing stupid green hats and playing bagpipes and fiddly-dee, fiddly-dee? you know? I mean,
And trudging through the snow. Yeah.
You're trying to break up the St. Patrick's Day celebrations from the election.
And I would say this is our election timing is one of the most insidious forms of voter suppression that we have. And this has been studied by academics for a long time. This election timing matters a lot, and it overly weights the interests of special interest groups, particularly government unions, especially when those government unions have residency requirements, meaning they have to live in the city of Chicago. Why do those stay on the books? So they can turn them out in very low turnout elections. So, you know, I'm not very sympathetic to, I would be more sympathetic to the argument we don't need a recall if we had reasonable election timing. So on the state front, this is actually, you know, I think kind of speaks to the pathology, because Chicago, in lacking a constitution, a city charter, we are the only city, big city in the country that does not have this foundational document that gives us checks and balances. To get anything done, we kind of rely on the mayor to be Mother Teresa or Pericles and have, you know, outstanding government affairs teams and political relationships and a really well-oiled machine to get stuff from Springfield. And that is by no means Brandon Johnson. It's a structural problem, but it's also, you know, Brandon Johnson has not, his administration has not shown an ability to do that. And this latest rift with Governor Pritzker is illustrative of that, where essentially the governor is now coming out and saying, you know, this guy never talks to me. He's not getting, there's no way he's getting what he wants from Springfield. And even House Speaker Chris Welch, in a story, I believe this in this morning's Tribune, is kind of saying the same thing.
This is Johnson. Like you said, I mean, and just structurally, he doesn't even have the wherewithal to manage, you know, probably the pound or animal care and control. But this is a guy who's took the budget almost to the end zone, to the red line, and put the city in peril of shutting down services because we don't have a budget, which is unheard of here. And yet we find out that he had a meeting on the books with Pritzker, and Pritzker says, yeah, we wanted some help. We were going to talk strategy. We set up a whole meeting, and he no-showed us. And, you know, hey, that's how it is. And he's called me 5 times. Is he afraid of Pritzker? Does he not want to be beholden to Pritzker? Is it the CTU that is clashing with him politically? What's the backstory here?
Well, yeah, part of you thinks, well, if you ask for things, that gives the person the opportunity to say no. So,
right.
So it's kind of better to not ask sometimes when you kind of know what the answer is going to be.
Sure.
the problem with that, though, is, and this is why I think really the Chicago local media has really jumped on Brandon Johnson for this, is that in every interview for months and months and months, when people raise the issue to him of, hey, this budget is not really balanced, you're going to have to hike taxes, he pivots the conversation every single time to, we're working very, very close with our state partners to get more progressive revenue solutions for the city of Chicago, which is code for, we're going to go to the state so we can hike taxes, or we're going to have the state try to do another progressive income tax referendum. Mm. And now that's been proven to be kind of bunk, because now you have the House Speaker and the governor both saying, I never hear from this guy. So I think that's why this story has kind of been the news recently.
Which makes the head of the CTU calling Pritzker a racist all much sweeter. That was our default. Like when he shows up with receipts saying, no, you haven't asked for help. You haven't done any of that work that's required of you as elected leaders to right the ship. And then, you know, they're like, oh, well, you're a racist for calling out the high, you know, the black mayor. He was the highest elected Blake. Yeah, John.
Jeff, wait a second. Are you casting aspersion on my Indiana neighbor, Stacey Davis?
Well, Jackson Potter is really more who I believe I'm throwing shade at, because he's the one who came out. You're right. Who came out and called Pritzker a racist, and how dare you not support the black man who's been elected to the highest, you know, position in Chicago? How dare you? You really want to be the white mayor who's not supporting the black? And this is what he's saying. He's calling Pritzker a racist for telling Johnson to get his house in order. And it's
then this brings me to a question for both of you, which is, as I mentioned at the opening in the monologue, is there a relationship between, in terms of wind damage, between California and Illinois, they have their forest fires, and they're fighting their forest fires with no hydrants or no water in the hydrants. And Illinois is fighting what? It's fighting the mayor with attempts at legislating him into some other kind of being. And he's not that person. He's not ever going to be that person. I mean, you could have Tony Preckwinkle lash a steel rod to his spine, and that's not going to change him. So, where are we, guys, with all this?
Well, if California has wildfires, we have financial fires, right, Austin?
I think the parallels to me are, less so the immediate cost and consequence, obviously. I mean, that's just horrendous seeing what's been happening to me. I have friends and family in that area, and it's just been so tragic to see what's happened
Right.
to their homes and communities.
Sad.
But what you see that's quite interesting is, I think in both cases, I often say that the largest, enemy, to call it an enemy, that you fight when you're trying to reform government in some way, is not a political party, it's not a union, it's not Mike Madigan, it's just apathy. And sometimes there are moments that are such crisis points, and the fire being one example, in LA, where everybody kind of picks their heads up and says, "Whoa, what the heck is going on?" And everybody is now paying attention to the action of their local government, which affects their lives more than anything that happens at the state level, and certainly more than anything that happens at the federal level, which is most of the news that they consume. So that is certainly happening in Los Angeles now. You saw that, I think, this recall example in the city of Chicago, and how much fire that's caught, excuse the pun, but how much attention that's got in Chicago is notable. People are waking up to the fact that their local governments really have a lot to do with their quality of life, and that often takes a crisis, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, Chicago's not immune to fires and bad management, and I don't know enough about the LA. I mean, we've been learning it. That's everybody's coming out with all the hey, look at this and hey, look at that, and it does seem another situation of just progressive Olympics pushing bad policy and poor management and people who maybe shouldn't be in management positions because they lack the structural organizational ability. Just like here in Chicago, and you see the spiral. I mean, the natural disaster. They don't see the disaster coming, or they make policy changes. They being those who are elected and are focused on other things. They don't see the big natural disaster coming when it happens. Like you said, now we're doing this post-doc on, well, what happened and what do we need to learn from this, and how do we keep this from happening in the future? And it's by taking elections seriously, and like you said, moving it out of February or March is the
Yeah.
or April is the right place to start with that. But I mean, it seems like the natural disaster for Chicago is, in my mind, I know we've talked about this, how that Chicago is a very diverse economy, and it's not going to necessarily happen as quickly. But the Detroitifying of Chicago, the rotting it out from because it's completely broke. And again, it comes back to the CPS CTU situation, which is another point which just shows how ridiculous they're going to this whole situation is, how ridiculous this is idea is that we need all this money to do all these things, but there's no forethought about, well, what's the end game? What's the disaster that's coming? Where do things stand with the CTU and CPS right now?
The CTU CPS dynamic has been fascinating to watch play out, and I think it's again an example of, I mean, both of you guys have covered Chicago a long time. We've seen many CTU CPS contracts. We've seen horrible borrowing decisions. When's the last time, if ever, so much attention has been paid to the specter of a high interest loan for the city of Chicago? I can't think of one time where anyone cared in decades to putting out a high interest loan. And yet, and this is again, I think it points to this idea of, like, the stakes are being laid bare. Like, the system is kind of being, for the first time, examined by people, and they're saying, wait, A union, a special interest union, is the number one spender on Brandon Johnson. And then he gets to bargain, quote unquote, bargain with them on the other side of the bargaining table. And he's supposed to be representing me. I don't think he is representing me. And wait, CTU is calling for a $300 million payday loan to cover their contract. Huh. That doesn't seem like it's in our best interest. I like, of course, our school should be well-resourced and teachers should be able to earn a good living in the state of Chicago, but that doesn't sound responsible to me. And that change in public perception, I think, has totally altered the bargaining dynamics. And now you're entering a situation where the union itself, the union leaders, Jackson Potter and Stacey Davis Gates, they will be facing their own election in May. Of their own members. And the question becomes, are they going to have a contract to show those folks? Or are they going to say, no, it's coming, it's coming, just wait, it's coming? They're being put in a very, very difficult situation. And I think it's all great that so much attention is being paid to this, to be clear. I think it's a really great thing for the city of Chicago.
But without pushback, meaningful pushback by the institutions, I'm thinking the Chamber of Commerce, the business community, and other people like this, is there any chance that these scoundrels will be exposed, or will they continue to exist, just below the radar and suck off any kind of hope we have for the system?
I think you have to focus on three things when it comes to, moving things in the right direction in the city of Chicago. And we're doing this at Illinois Policy Institute. I'm going to be focusing actually a lot more of my time this year on these things specifically. But three things that I think are necessary. One is you need to educate and completely delegitimize, as a result of their actions, the new political machine in the city of Chicago, which is the CTU. And I think that's happening. I think, you just look at their favorable numbers. They were in the 60s and 70% range for the last 20 years. They're now in the 20, 30% range. People are waking up to the fact that this institution has little to do with the three things in its name, Chicago Teachers and Unions. And it's a radical political machine that does not have the best interests of the broader public in mind. So that's the first thing. Second thing, we need to lift our heads up and look around, not just for a new mayor, but to solutions that are very common in other big cities. So I talked about city charter, talked about the budget that just happened. You saw, I thought, quite admirably, Alderman Gil Villegas get up in the city council meeting and say, "Hey, we've got two guys in a closet staffed for city council that work on analyzing the budget, and the mayor has an entire massive team working on this. We are totally outmanned and outgunned. We're not independent. This is one of the reasons why we need a city charter." That is the type of mentality shift that has to take place. And then third, it's what I was talking about with apathy. I mean, Brandon Johnson won by, you guys can correct me on the numbers, but 50 to 60,000 votes against Paul Vallas. I mean, you have
Margins.
400,000 folks that I would describe as generally reform-minded voters in the city of Chicago who vote in presidential elections but don't vote in the mayoral. So there's a massive pool of people who, if they were to vote, they would vote for reform, but they're not activated in any kind of way. So, focusing on those three things, I'm quite hopeful that things can change.
But they don't want to oppose if the argument is that Brandon Johnson is a black man who is a leader of in his black community, as Johnson himself would want to pitch it. I doubt if the people of the north side of Chicago would be all that active in terms of dumping him, because they don't want to be perceived as antithetical to black political aspirations. We've seen this dynamic play out again and again and again. And I wonder, do you think it's going to continue this way?
I think Brandon Johnson was able to probably rely on that dynamic in the last mayoral election. But now that he has governed, and now that every community, not just whites on the north side, but Hispanic voters, black voters, Asian voters, they have seen his actual performance, and I think he will be judged based on that. Far more than the color of his skin in the city of Chicago. So,
I hope so.
I won't be surprised if that is, part of the argument. I mean, as you guys probably remember,
Oh,
Mayor Lori
God, yeah.
Lightfoot in her reelection campaign said, "Yeah, guys, I've had a, I've it's been I've been getting all this bad press because of my identity, right?"
Right.
And I don't think voters bought that.
Right. The city was, we elected the, gay minority mayor. We elected had a Jewish mayor. Now we've had the black mayor, but we're not progressive. And, it's so hard to be in a minority. And like, come on, we've proven as a populace that we want to be, want the best of the best, except we were told that the best of the best was was Brennan Johnson and not the racist, whoever else is running against him, right? Because I mean, John, to your point, is that going to go away? They've shown us it isn't. I mean, that was Jackson Potter's immediate response to pushback from Pritzker was call him a racist white guy who doesn't understand and doesn't want to be. Pretty much told him, do you really want to be running for re-election as the white guy who told the black guy no? Like, that's what he says to him. And you're like, well, wait a minute. That's all you got? There's no receipts. There's no, hey, you're showing us. So I think you're right, that Brennan Johnson's just been such a failure. And he got elected by white progressives. I mean, they've leaned away from logic and went towards emotion, and we got him. And there's no unseeing what we've seen and the abject failure it is for him to manage.
You couldn't afford, they couldn't afford to elect a guy who knew what to do. They couldn't
Right.
elect a guy who knew how to manage in crisis. No, you have to have a, you have to beat him up as a pink guy or white guy. Yeah, that's what
Right.
they did.
Austin, who do you think fits the bill or stands up to the CTU next time around? Because we've got to look beyond this mayor. I mean, it's I know we've still got 2 years or so, but it's over. I mean, there's no way he gets reelected.
I don't think so. But we're proving my point with where this conversation's going. It's like, who we got, right? Who we got? Who's
Right. Who's
the leader in
that?
the horse race? I think it's way too early to tell. And
Sure.
I think smartly, people who would want to run aren't really popping up their head quite yet. I will say though, those conversations are happening, right? So I think we
Oh,
all
yeah.
know people who meet with those people who say they want to run for mayor, and those people are asking people in positions of authority, "Hey, would
Sure.
you get behind me for mayor?" And I think there are a couple really important things that should be asked of those people.
Like what?
One is, are you going to take government union money? And if you
Yeah.
have in the past, why did you? That I think is a very key and relevant question, given the current mayor's background,
Yeah.
entirely backed by government unions who have their who are self-interested. And the second is, do you support a city charter effort? Do you support a city constitution? And I think the answer to that question is very important. You actually saw a majority of mayoral candidates support a charter in the last race, but I do think it's a litmus test for whether you'll get governance as usual. Which is to say, total Wild West, total, almost like South American strongman style leadership in the city of Chicago? Or are they humble enough to know that checks and balances serve everyone, and limiting the power of the mayor actually makes the mayor's job more achievable in the city of Chicago? So those are the two things I would be asking those people.
Do you think, though? I mean, it's almost a pipe dream in the city of Chicago. I mean, every candidate's got to come out and say, "Hey, I'm pro union. I'm one of yous," and but then not take the money. I mean, that's a lot of money, and every organization is going to want to throw money at him. I don't see that happening, but it seems like it would be wonderful if that's what they thought. But on the charter thing, isn't there a worry though? I mean, I always grew up in the era that you say, oh, a CPAC, right? There was anyone said they fall in line, they sign their name to the CPAC charter and say, I'm against for a conservative government, and then they all of a sudden they're stigmatized as being as conservative, right wing, whatever. If someone comes out and says, I'm pro charter and it's got to be a charter, I mean, don't they run the risk of just being cornered and corralled as some right wing conservative crazy person? I mean, that seems to be the play every time someone comes out with any sort of plan.
I think it's impossible to do with a charter because it's not a conservative idea. These were all passed in big cities during the capital P progressive era of the United States in the 20s, or the early 20th century. And every major big blue union dominated city in the country has one of these. The next biggest city that doesn't have a charter is Indianapolis.
Oh, and we don't
So,
want to be like them. There's your talking point. Don't be like
exactly.
Indy.
I don't think anybody thinks of a charter as a the opinion of a charter in the city of Chicago for many years. This is changing now, but I would go into these same rooms of the people who were talking about who were talking to mayoral candidates. I'd say, "Hey, Chicago lacks this constitution called charter," and they say, "Oh no, I think you misunderstand. We do have charter schools in the city of Chicago, right?" The main opinion of charters in Chicago is we don't know
Sure.
what the heck this is.
Sure.
Calling it a right-wing idea, I think, would fall on deaf ears. And you already see kind of a coalition that's quite interesting in Chicago that's forming around this idea. I mean, you look at someone like Cam Buckner, who ran for mayor last time. Buckner is very familiar with the city charter because he formerly worked as a chief of staff for the mayor of New Orleans.
Yeah.
And in New Orleans, you could imagine you work in government like that in a major city. And then you come to Chicago and say, there's some controversy, and you go, "Hey, what does the charter say?" And everybody looks at you like you have three heads.
Right.
You saw faithfully, like you saw Michael Flager coming out for a city charter in an op-ed in the Tribune. You saw Gil Villegas on the city council floor. So I think it'd be very difficult and obviously very incorrect to peg this as an idea of any political tilt, actually.
What concerns me are people like Arne Duncan and his alter ego, David Axelrod, running a campaign where he's the progressive heir to Obama. Obama confers his blessing, and they try to get around the charter by playing personality. Same thing with what's his name? That alderman whose father is a huge capitalist. I forgot his name now.
Oh, he ran for state's
He ran for
attorney.
state's attorney and gave
Yeah,
us,
Alderman in Conway.
Conway,
and
Conway.
he
Sorry.
guaranteed us that we'd have Kim Fox. So these two guys are positioning themselves. I know you don't want to talk personalities, but personalities make me crazy. But
I
I
totally
see.
understand. I mean, Alderman Conway is supportive of a city charter. I can speak for him. I can't speak for Arne Duncan. But I think that's kind of our job is as folks who people in our lives ask about city politics, ask about what's going
Right,
on.
right.
It has to come from the bottom up
Sure.
and in some ways from the top down too, right? It's again, these meetings that mayoral candidates go to and they ask for money or they ask for support. What are you asking them to do? I'm not just going to support you because you're not Brandon Johnson. Almost everybody in the city is not Brandon Johnson, so that doesn't help.
Well, that's it. I mean, a new if a new Chicago or the future of Chicago needs to be laid out in a charter. And controlling what that charter says is going to a whole other basket of worms. All right, Austin, I gotta get a food thing from you because that's our new theme here. And what's an Austin Berg do to keep warm on a cold winter's day when he's trying to fight the good fight?
Interesting. Food wise?
Yeah, give me
Oh,
a you got
okay,
a
interesting. Well,
soup,
I
you
was going to
got a
say, yesterday I went cross
or a
country skiing
meal.
in Chicago, which is always very funny because people would come up and ask you, like, what the hell are those? So I do that to
Huh.
keep warm. But
On the like on the lakefront, like we're in.
I've done it on the lakefront before, and you'll see some guys out there doing it. But on river in River Park, I did it, and Horner Park too, and it was
Okay.
great. So I kept warm doing that. And then I would say food-wise to keep warm, great place. This is my favorite bar, new favorite bar in the city of Chicago. It's called the Green Post. It's on Lawrence and Rockwell near Lincoln Square. And it's old British. I don't know about you guys. My like COVID era fantasy was sort of like Irish pub, like real, you're in Ireland. There's folk music. It's warm. There's people chatting. There's a lot
Are
of
you
wood.
wearing a fisherman's knit sweater like Tom the Clancy's having?
Yeah,
Okay.
we're lots of wool sweaters.
Right.
And that's this place. It's great.
Name again? What's the name of it again?
It's called the Green Post.
The Green Post.
All right.
Do they have a good shepherd's pie?
I
They
got
have an outstanding shepherd's pie.
it. I'm
They've got
there.
great Guinness. They do Irish folk music on some Sundays with people from Old Town School. It's
Uh-oh.
great.
Don't mention the old town school around John.
I
It boils his blood. The
just
pan flutes.
I'm thinking of the people that told Dylan he was a traitor and wasn't allowed to sing anymore because
Judas. Yeah, there's not a lot of Judas people there, I don't think.
Well, Austin, happy 2025. Let's make it a good one.
Happy New Year, guys. Thank you.
Thank you, Austin. Thanks for joining us. For Austin Berg of the Illinois Policy Institute, for Jeff Carlin, executive producer at WGN Radio, and for me, John Cass, editor-in-chief of johncassnews.com, where you always get a good cup of Midwestern common sense. Join us again next time, won't you? On the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.